All right, what's up? Welcome to episode 2 of Dungeon Talk. This is Evan, and I'm here with
Michael.
And let me turn this down. So when I go back in, that actually doesn't make any difference. So the problem that we ran into the first time was that I was turning it down out here, thinking that, okay, it's good now. And then that doesn't make any difference because what I have to do is actually turn the slider down in the program, which we'll have to do afterwards.
Okay, I assume you know what you're doing and that you'll take care of it.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't bad last time, but just with me in particular, there were a couple places where it's hard to understand me anyways, but it was even more so.
I had so much difficulty trying to get your voice and my voice matched up for some reason so that it's the same level.
Right.
Because there's a couple different ways that you can do it, but I'm learning. I've never even seen the software before. So I'm watching all these YouTube videos of other people use it and trying to do what they do.
Right.
And it's just hell.
That's very similar to what I'm doing with the website when Nico's not around, because I'm really trying not to bug him too much. So a lot of this I'm doing on my own. So I just go to Google, go to YouTube, just asking questions, going to forums. There's quite a few things that I'm messing up that he's having to fix, but I'm slowly learning what I'm doing. Last night in particular, I probably worked on the website for about 4 hours, and I really got a lot of the stuff that I was trying to get figured out, I got figured out. There's a couple things left that I just don't think I know how or could do on my own, but for the most part, it's done, other than the stuff that I don't know how to do, if that makes any sense.
That makes perfect sense, but it doesn't say anything. It's done other than what I don't know how to do. That
exactly.
Doesn't tell anybody anything.
All right, so, well, I got it figured out how we can post our podcast and post our web journals,
right,
as well as have them on the pages that we want. And
so I have a question. I'm going to interject real quick. So when we, let's say we have 10 podcasts up in a few months or something, do you go to the, will there be a tab at the top where it says Dungeon Talk, you click on it, and then all the podcasts that we've done will just, like, you'll scroll down the page and
yes.
Down the page and down the page, and it'll just keep going forever.
Yes, it'll be reverse order, just like Fear the Boot looks like. I'm kind of modeling our website off of how that looks on theirs.
Okay.
But even within that, like at the end of each of their podcasts, they have a little bar that kind of gives like a summary. It also allows for any comments that have been posted to be put there. I don't know how to do that yet. So right now, if someone leaves any comments, I think it's going to go towards all of them, not just the most recent one.
Right. And any comments right now are just going to be bad anyway, so we don't need to see them.
Well, I have two different people that I've asked, like, could you please just leave some comments just so I know how they work?
And to make us feel better.
Well, because we're set up as moderators, I need to know how to moderate them, how it works, what does it look like on my end, what do I have to do? And to make sure that it actually works, because I'm pretty sure it does, but I'd like to test it out. So I have two of my friends who both have listened to the podcast and who have been to the website, and they've kind of given me like feedback on email and through Facebook, but I asked them to go back in and put comments. So I'm hoping within the next day or two that there'll actually be some comments.
So what was their feedback, by the way?
It was very mixed, not necessarily anything negative, but just sort of, you know, what exactly are you trying to do? What's going to happen in the future? How are you going to keep this going? You know, what's the long term? So.
Just to keep, I mean, what are they expecting?
Who knows? I don't think they know what they're expecting either. I mean, as far as I know, we're the only ones that have ever done this that they know. So it's kind of a new experience for everybody.
All right. Is there any other website stuff that you want to talk about before we get into the topics?
Well, the submission form is up. We had talked about that before. And the way we're going to do it now is differently than the way we said in the original podcast. So what I have learned is posting your email address on the internet is a bad idea.
You're just going to get a bunch of
spam. And I've already started seeing that where it was only up for like 2 or 3 days where the submissions at DiceMonkeys.com was up. And there's already a lot of, I guess, the robot spiders, whatever they're called, they just troll through all the boards.
As soon as they see an email on a webpage, they just start sending
emails to it. So what we have now is we've got a submission form set up. So if you go to the website, there's a page, it's called Share Adventure. You click on that, and it basically you put your name, your address, email address, kind of the message, and then there's a place to attach files. So you could do it. Basically, we're going to use it as a contact form and a submission form. So if you want to contact one of us, something about a podcast, you have an idea, you think we're terrible and you want us to stop, whatever, you can use that form to send us an email. But if you also want to submit content, which we really hope people will start doing, then that's how you would do that as well. I've set it up. It's a pretty generous file size. If you convert it to PDFs like we want, there should be no trouble sending even a 30 or 40 page PDF document within that file size. It'll go to the email address that's set up within the contact form, so it doesn't have to be posted on the website, but it still goes to that same email address. And so as soon as we start, I still check the email every day, see if there's anything posted in there, because it's also hooked up to the Facebook account. It's also hooked up to the Twitter account. So like when I change things on Facebook and people respond, which is where I got some of that original feedback, it just sends me that email like you get on your Facebook account where it says, you know, X and X likes your status, or so-and-so posted on your comment, that kind of thing. So I'm getting those already, but nothing's been submitted yet as far as content.
People that you've told about the podcast are posting replies on Facebook?
Well, I have a Facebook page for Dice Monkeys. Okay. So there's a Dice Monkeys page, and some of the people that I know that are D&D players, I've already friended. So when I post like, hey, Evan and I are doing a podcast today.
I have never used Facebook.
I don't use it that often. Even in my personal Facebook account, I read everyone else's posts pretty much daily, but I may have posted a dozen times my entire Facebook.
You're more of just a Facebook peeping Tom. You just go around and
there
see
are Facebook
what other people...
stalkers. Yeah, okay. It's kind of what it is. So the website's coming along. I've got the artwork for your monkey avatar integrated. Once we're done, we're actually going to look at
it. Once you got it on the website, because after I called you, I went and looked at it, and it looks fine. It's not before just seeing it when I was done with it and not on the website. I didn't think it was going to look good, but once it's up there, I was like, yeah, it looks fine.
Yeah. It is what we want it to be, and a lot of, you know, I want to big props, I guess, to Jim Dooley. He's the one that did the artwork for us. The original one is amazing, and you know, you did a fantastic job converting it to digital, but it still lost some of that detail.
Yeah.
Even more so when I had to shrink it down to make it fit within the logo heading, but it looks amazing ahead of time. And maybe something in the future, we could have him do a webcomic if he's interested in doing that and have our characters interact. So have you come up with a name for your guy yet? Because my guy, Mumbles, hasn't even...
It's just Evan.
And I wanted to have a cool name, too, because like I envision in the website comic that my guy always just mumbles. Like, that's why he's called Mumbles. Like, every bubble will just be squiggle, 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 mm-hmm. and everyone else has to react to what he actually said, because I thought that would be funny.
No, then I don't have a name for it right now.
All right, Mr. No Creativity.
No creativity. I'm the one that's doing all the creative work.
No.
The music and the artwork and stuff like that.
All right, fine, whatever. Then you can come up with a name.
All right, so do you want to get into one of the topics?
Sure.
All right, well, we have my DMing so far, and the other one is a specific topic about something that happened with our game. Which one do you want to get into first?
I think we should start with DMing and kind of backtrack to what happened until then, and then that should make sense. It'll connect right to what happened when we played Monday night. So... a lot of the reasons why we're even doing this podcast, as I've mentioned on the website, is you and I started playing D&D together 2 or 3 years ago. You played for a while, you liked it, and that's some stuff we'll get into some more details in future podcasts. But you took a break, and then you called me kind of out of the blue, and you're like, hey, I think I want to play D&D again, and specifically, I want to run a game. I want to be a DM. And you were just asking some advice on how it would work, and we kind of set up an environment just with one of your friends, which I know as well, and one of my friends from my current game. So you've only got 3 players. You know, we're all very accommodating to you learning. No one's getting upset if you don't know a rule or if we're having to figure it out. And I just wanted to kind of talk about how that's going as a process. In my mind, the people that are most likely to listen to our podcast, A, hate it, and they just want to listen to it so they can bitch about it. Or it's someone who's new to the game as a player or new to the game as a DM and they're looking for advice. And I think that's where we could be helpful, is kind of talking about your journey and how you went from your idea of a game to actually playing the game and now going forward. Because one of the first pieces of advice I gave you is, no matter what you think we're going to do, we're going to do something else. And I think that really came out during that last game. So I want to get to that, but I want to start with what has gone well. So just kind of talk a little bit about the game you're doing and how it's going.
All right. Well, to start off with, I think that in the beginning, it was much easier. And my time the thing that's most frustrating to me now is my time preparing for the games. Because in the beginning, it was a lot easier. I had the beginning of the story that I could just write out. And it was the beginning of the game was more predictable than the way the game is going now. Because to get the story started, the players or the you guys have kind of less options of which avenue to take, as in later in the game where there's a lot more things going on. And now you guys have lots of different options, lots of different, there's different characters that you know, there's different things going on, there's different locations, there's different areas, all this stuff. And so in the beginning, when I was preparing, I didn't have to think about all that. All I had to think about was like, okay, this is going to be the first encounter. This is probably how it'll go. I was kind of close, but actually the first encounter didn't go the way I thought it was going to go, but it wasn't that hard to keep the story on track with what you guys did differently. So my time spent preparing was more productive, and now my time preparing is less productive, and it's kind of aggravating because I'll sit and think about, like, I guess kind of what I'm doing right now is keeping a notebook, and I'm trying to write down, okay, if this character does this, then this could happen. Or the first thing I do is I try to list what the different PCs or NPCs, mm-hmm. all of my NPCs that like in the town and the bad guys and stuff like that, I try to brainstorm and write down what's going on with each of them right now. And that way, when you guys in the game say, okay, we're going to go talk to this person, then I can flip back and say, okay, this is what they've been doing since you've been gone. And it, when you run into them, this is what they're doing now. But there's so much of that that I just sit down and get overwhelmed. And so the last two games that I've gone into as a DM, I'm like fearful driving to your house. And I'm almost dreading it. I could compare it to like, okay, me and my brother like to go whitewater rafting. It is so much fun. The last time we went, we did like a pretty tough river, and there was like, it was mostly like class 4 and class 5 rapids, which are big, and they classify the rapids based on like likelihood of death pretty much.
Wow.
So you could have a really big rapid that might only be a class 3 rapid because there's a lot of things, like if there's an overhanging cliff with a whirlpool into it next to it,
right,
then that's more danger, and that's like how the class goes up. When I'm whitewater rafting, when I'm coming up to the, I can hear where, like the water's calm, we're in the boat, and we're going around a bend, and I can hear the rapid coming up ahead. There is a time before every rapid where I want to get out of that boat.
Sort of like, an oh crap moment.
Yeah, and it's legitimate. Like, I'm scared for my life, and I don't want to be there. I don't want to do it. I mean, it's 100 times worse than like going up the hill on a roller coaster.
Right.
Because I'm just excited. But this, I'm actually scared. I'm legitimately scared when I'm coming. Okay. And that's how I feel like going into these games, because I'm so afraid of not knowing how to get all the things that you guys want to do into my story. Because now there's so much going on that it's just overwhelming.
And I can, believe me, I agree with you. I can see that. The same thing happens in just about every game. I believe it was Chris Perkins. He's one of the lead designers on the D&D team right now at WotC. And I think I was reading his Twitter feed or one of his blogs or whatever, and he talks about preparation for the game. And it's 10% preparation and 90% improvisation. And that's really what you need to focus on.
And I'm doing it backwards because I'm trying to do 90% preparation.
And
it's
not going
to
work.
I'm trying to sit down at home, and I spend hours and hours and hours really just thinking and panicking over the game because I can't like sit down and think and write down every possibility. So,
right. And I'll say you're doing a good job. Like, I'm still enjoying the game a lot. I look forward to the game. Nico is as well. I don't really talk to Rob as much outside of the game as I do Nico, but he seems excited and interested. I mean, we went from originally going to play your game like every 2 months to every month, and now we're doing it every other week. So we wouldn't be doing that if we weren't having fun. So you're doing a good job. So you can kind of, you know, a little bit there. But you're spending too much time trying to anticipate. And as I've said to you before, that's the draw of role-playing games, is that you can do anything. So there's no way that you're going to be able to prepare for that contingency. In a video game, you know, you walk into the room, you talk to the NPC, they give you your quest, you walk out, you walk back in, they give you the same dialogue. You know, that even open-ended sandbox games, there's still only so many variations that they're going to say. Where in a role-playing game, I could walk in and talk to the NPC, walk out, walk back in, and have it. We need to have a different conversation because this is supposed to be a real person.
Right.
And I can ask them about their last birthday and what they're going to do tomorrow and what's their favorite color. There's no way that you're going to be able to predetermine
and
all that.
We ran into a problem where that was our, what, fourth game?
Third, I thought. Or fourth. Yeah, you're right.
I think
fourth.
It's fourth.
Fourth.
And for the first time, I had to take a timeout and say, okay, I don't know what to do here. Because you were trying to have a conversation with a character who, the conversation that you were having was a really big deal. And I didn't know how to play the character and what his reaction to your conversation would be. You were trying to bluff him into thinking that something was happening in order for you to free these guys that were being held in a prison.
Correct.
But your bluff that you were doing was just going against everything that had been happening in the town that he had been living in and everything that he had been... Because even though the mayor of that town is crazy, like, the things that he's been saying are kind of true, and the people, they just don't know what
right.
to believe.
Just so, because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't out to get you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how this works with the mayor. He's bat crap insane, but he's also correct in that there are really bad things about to happen to the town. We were concerned that the way that his anxiety is making it worse instead of better. And we're kind of jumping ahead anyways, but basically we were trying to overthrow the leadership of the town because he's not going to be an effective leader when this bad stuff really does happen. He's more of a panicky rather than a planning leader. So I was trying to break the two people out of prison that I thought would actually be good leaders, trying to get them in a position of power.
And there was just a lonely citizen who...
Not a guard, just a guy that used to live in the village with us.
But now he's, like, volunteered to stand guard, kind of because he's afraid of what's going to happen, and the mayor's been telling him this. So the mayor took guards, he volunteered. Now he's guarding people in jail that you need to break out, and you're trying to bluff him. And your bluff was good, but it just goes against everything that he would be thinking right now. And so I didn't know how to play it. And I felt bad. As a DM, I felt bad. And I felt like I was stopping the momentum. Because at that point, which this is really getting, we're just like going into the next topic. But at that point, your character had kind of taken over the game for a while, which was okay, which was good at that point because everybody was really into it. But not only had you taken over the game, now I was stopping the momentum because I didn't know what to do. So
first
I felt
all,
really bad about it.
Don't feel bad. That happens to everybody, the DMs, unless – I've never played with a DM that could handle all the things that we were throwing at you so quickly. A couple of things that you could have done a little bit differently. It's sort of like when I've told you before, there's going to come times when as a DM you're going to cheat. And usually it's going to be in the favor of the players rather than against most of the time.
Yeah, and it's been with encounters where I've had to roll damage and be like, I can't do that.
Right, yes.
Or something like
so
that.
You roll dice and then you go four, no matter what the dice. Yeah, we all do that.
Or my 1d4s seem to always land on one. Have you noticed that?
I really try not to pay too much attention to it. But it always happens. And the thing is, we know as players that you're doing that, but we don't want it to be super obvious. Like, it actually will hurt the game. And I'll talk about that in a little bit because I was in a situation where it actually hurt the game. We anticipate that you're going to cheat for us a little bit just to keep the story interesting. Like, if we're killing everything, I want you to make it a little bit tougher. If we're getting murdered, I want you to make it a little bit easier. I don't want to always win, because then that's not fun. I don't want to always lose. So I expect you to, as the DM, to kind of moderate that a little bit. But I don't want it to be super obvious. So with that, if we throw something at you that's just crazy, it's okay to take the time out, but don't say, guys, hold on, I don't know what I'm doing here. Because that does kind of take the game down. Just be like, okay, let me look at my notes. And then you just flip through some papers, they could be blank. And in your head thinking, oh crap, okay. And then you go, oh, okay. And then you look back up and then you go with what you're going to go with.
I think I did that. I actually did what you said, where I stopped the game. I think I even put my hands up.
Yes, you said time out.
Okay, hold on. I don't know what to do here. And I think I did that because I had two experienced DMs at the table who were playing the game, and I was looking, even though you guys were playing the game, I was, Nico was kind of feeding me advice as we were going, and I was just trying to take a step out of the game and get more advice from you guys. I wasn't going to just let you guys say, well, here's what I would do, and then do that, because I still needed to make a legitimate decision. You know, I wasn't going to, if one of you said, well, I'd believe me, I wouldn't just do that. But that, because you guys had been feeding me advice, like, for these past four games, I can see where I shouldn't have done that. I should have just flipped through the notes. But my first reaction was to do what I had been doing and look towards you guys for advice.
And again, we don't mind that. That's part of my love of the game is teaching other people. I really like to do that, and I want you to get better. And again, it's all advice. No one has ever paid me money to play my game. No one has ever paid me money for any content I've generated. So everything I've ever said about D&D is an opinion. So if I tell you what I think I would do or what you should do, that's just one person's opinion. And even Nico and I didn't always agree on what you should do. But in general, in those situations, what I would suggest in the future, particularly in that situation where it's a bluff check, is you just set the DC. We're playing 3.5 edition. You'd set the DC at where you think it's going to be for what the type of lie that I'm trying to tell. And then you either give me a bonus or a penalty on how I'm presenting it. So, you know, I could have bluffed and said something that, you know, I was sent here by your wife to relieve you because she wants you to come home right away. And in your head, you would decide, well, maybe they've been having marital problems and this is a realistic situation. Maybe, you know, again, outside of the game, but in the real life of the NPCs, that's something that his wife would have done. So maybe I get a +2 because I just picked a lie that would have worked. The lie that I picked was completely the wrong lie because I was trying to set myself up as being associated with the mayor. So it was just a choice. So then you would have given me a negative. The DC stayed the same because I'm trying to bluff a character. The penalty and negative should have been how I went about doing it and the choices that I made.
Well, that's something that I've been struggling with. And actually, when you took a break from the game at one point because you had to run upstairs and do something.
Put the kids to bed, I think.
And while you were gone, Nico was explaining to me kind of how to set the DCs. Because what I was trying to do was, which I shouldn't have been doing, I was basing the DC off of who the character who was trying to do it. So, for instance, you're like, if you have a really good bluff, then I was thinking, okay, since he has a really good bluff, I should set the DC higher. Than somebody like Rob or Nico who doesn't have a really good bluff. I should set the DC lower.
Right, and that's like opposite of what you should do.
Right. And Nico, I was asking Nico that and he was explaining it to me. No, your DC always stays the same no matter what. But then explain what you mean. Okay, so let's say if the DC to bluff this character is 25, then you have you're gonna roll, let's say you roll 12 and your modifier is 8, so you have a 20.
Right.
Explain about the bonus or the negative that you would set based on whatever your lie is that you're trying to do.
And this is a Michael thing. I don't know that this is in the rules necessarily, but I want to always reward a character or a player for making a decision and being invested in the game. So I'm trying to think of a good example would be, okay, so the DC to bluff this particular character is X. Let's just say it's 15. It's an easy bluff. And as a DM, I'm not going to ask my player to actually give me the lie, you know, and actually, like, someone scripted it out, and I'm never going to be able to deliver a line in the spur of the moment, improvising as well as a writer in a movie that has time to craft these, you know, intricate spy movies where the really charismatic guy always has the right thing to say. It's just not going to happen, at least not for me. So what I would want you to do is to kind of tell me the gist of the lie or the gist of the bluff. And again, the one that I went with is that I was secretly working for the mayor, that I was part of his plan the entire time, and the fact that we had left was all part of the ruse and that we were on the secret mission. So what you would have decided is, okay, as you said, that's the exact opposite of what he's been told. So that would have given me negatives. The check should have been 15, but because I picked just a bad version of the lie, you would have given me a -3 or -4. So, the DC stayed the same, but my role would have been affected trying to get to that target number. If I had picked a lie that was more believable, maybe I was just sent to relieve him, or I can't even really think of a good example, but I had come up with something that made more sense. Maybe I had done more research. Maybe I had eavesdropped ahead of time and heard a conversation between him and another guard at changeover, and maybe they were expressing some concerns about the mayor that I could have used to make my lie more believable. Then you might have given me a +2 or a +4 to that role, because I just picked a lie that was better. That's how I would have affected that. Another way to think of it is like gather information. The gather information is a very common role in Dungeons and Dragons. You're in a town, you're trying to check out rumors, see what's going on. So you roll a gather information check. The DC is 15 to find out the local rumors. But what is the player doing to try to influence that? If I go into the local tavern and say, okay, I'm going to spend the first hour buying everybody drinks, then the DC should still be 15, but I should get a bonus because, A, everybody's liquored up.
But the way you're describing it to me, it sounds like it doesn't really matter which way you do it. Like, it sounds like I could move the DC. Let's say the DC is going to be really hard. It's going to be 25. So as you say, I'm going to spend an hour buying everybody drinks and getting them liquored up. I don't have to give you bonus, but I can say, okay, he's done a really good job. Now I'm going to make the DC 20. I could move the DC around instead of, it's the same thing.
At the end of the day, it is the same thing.
I'm just thinking about it a different way.
However you want to view it, but at the end of the day, my actions should either make it easier or harder for me to accomplish things. And,
right.
And the DC shouldn't move based on my stats, because that actually penalizes me for putting points into that skill.
So do you think, because this is something that I've been thinking about that kind of bothers me, is that I sometimes think that there's just too much dice rolling. We roll for everything. So do you think that we should necessarily roll for your bluff? Or should, because if you have a really good bluff, why is it, okay, if you have a really good bluff, you're going to get those +8 or +10 points no matter what you roll. And then I should almost feel like I should sit back. You should actually take time and describe to me exactly what you did. You described to me exactly what you would say as if you were saying it to the person. It was you spoke, you know, a paragraph worth of words in detail about what you were doing, and it was really good. It didn't work because it wasn't the right information, but it wasn't a bad. You know what I'm saying?
It could have been better. If I had more information, I could have crafted a better lie. It was a very spur of the moment, oh crap, what am I going to do?
So when we roll that D20, what do those numbers represent?
They represent fate or luck. That's what that number is for. So that if there's ever a situation where, because you should be able to do that, and you should do that a lot, where you just decide if things work or not. That's your role as the DM. When you go to the dice is when you're not sure yourself. And that's kind of like where you were in that case, because I had a pretty good lie and I have a good bonus. And as a player, I came up with a good way of telling it.
I don't even think I should have had you roll a bluff check for that, because I think I should have just listened to your lie and I should have basically rolled the dice in my, whatever, however good I thought your lie was, and then also how I thought he was perceiving it, I should have came up with the D20 number for how good you did myself, added your modifier to it, set the DC, and went from there. Because you roll a one. Well, what does that really mean? Right. Does that mean that you like sneezed in the middle of your speech,
right,
and he was like, "Oh, that must be his tell. He's lying or something." Like, what does that really represent?
We talked about
moment?
This in one of the earlier test podcasts that we aren't really using, but we may cut and paste into some later ones about the D&D Next. And this podcast is not designed to be yay D&D Next, though there is a lot about it that we both really like. But one of the things they talked about in the playtest materials was that exact example where you have a player that crafts a really good, just inspirational speech. It's like the Braveheart scene where he's rallying the troops on horseback and he's riding back and forth and he gets everybody ready to go, you know, fight. And then you're like, as a DM, okay, roll your charisma check or your leadership check, and they roll a one. That just, it's dumb for one thing. I mean, you, as a player, you did this great job, and then you let the die kind of take away from that.
And it kind of goes along with, let's say you're going to do like an intimidate. And you were saying an earlier time, I think we talked about it, you were saying, you know, if somebody is 7 feet tall and they're built like Arnold Schwarzenegger, they're intimidating no matter what their dice says that
right.
they are.
So if in 3.5, charisma is based. Is intimidates based on charisma. That makes no sense. You could be really uncharismatic, but if you're a big hulking brute of a guy, I'm going to be intimidated by you.
And more, whether or not somebody else is intimidated by him is going to be based more on the NPC's stats, you know, because they're going to, they would have to be really crazy and messed up in the head and think that I can just take anybody, and only, you know, 0.001% of everybody that you run into is going to think that way. But that's going to be based on them, not anything you do.
And I can see that. What I want to get to the counter argument, because I completely agree with you, and I think as a DM you have that right, and you should be more just decisive and say, yes, it will work, and no, it won't. But the problem that you run into is when you have a player, so let's say there's someone like Rob, who's not very educated on the game. He's learning, but you know, he's just not as adept at it yet. But let's say he wanted to play a character that was really smooth. He wanted to play the kind of the charismatic rogue like I am. Well, as a person, he may not be able to as quickly come up with a bullcrap lie like I could. So then he's getting penalized. But his character has a plus 20 to bluff, but Rob personally has a plus 1. I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not fair to Rob for you to do it that way then, because it hurts his character. Just like, he can't really throw fireballs either, but you let his character
do it. You could be playing
it.
With a group of people, and one of them who's playing that rogue like has a stutter.
Yes.
Legitimately.
Yes.
So if he actually tries to vocally tell me his lie across the table, and I'm basing it on what I'm hearing... Yeah, I see where your point, where he needs to rely on his character stats and the dice roll. But
so I don't think there's anything to say that you can't do that selectively. And in that case, if I did just come up with a brilliant lie off the top of my head, then maybe you just say, okay, in that situation, you did such a good job. It just, you pass and you move on.
So what if in that situation, what if you explained this lie to me and I didn't let you do a bluff check and I just told you, I said, he doesn't believe you, and he's going to attack you.
I would have felt cheated as a player, because I've spent time and effort and background, you know, points
so
building up a good bluff, and not to even get a chance to use it.
So in a way, you're a little bit comforted by the dice.
Not necessarily comforted, but at the end of the day, that's my role. It is luck. If I roll a really good number, then even though... Because I felt like, this is one of the things I want to get to, I felt like you didn't want me to succeed. Like, as a player to DM, I really felt like almost the entire time, like, Evan doesn't want me to be doing this. He wishes I would just let this go, because you kept making it so difficult. Every time I turned around, there was a new obstacle and a new problem, and I thought, he just wants me to not do this.
I planned on a prison break.
Really? See, I felt like you were just really trying to get me to not do this.
But the way you... I didn't plan on you guys... catching up with Chrislin. That wasn't planned. But what I said was that you guys need to be aware of the large group of monsters that is going to be attacking the town soon. So what I wrote down was that if you guys choose not to go check out the mountain, then when you get back, Chrislyn will have the information because that's how you – because Faulkmore sent her. So I didn't plan on you guys running into her. I planned on you guys trying to sneak up to the town and maybe getting arrested by the guards as you tried to sneak in. And then you might get thrown in jail and then meet your – and then see your father in jail or see Dolph's father in jail. Or since Chrislyn did tell – you did meet up with her, then I thought about maybe all you guys going to the jail, which it in turn it would have been easier to bum rush it. But just the way you did it just wasn't exactly a scenario that I had thought out. So when I I guess in your perception that I didn't want you to be doing it, I was never thinking that. I was nervous. I was really nervous because I wanted to, I wanted everything to come off real and natural. And I didn't, I had never been in a situation like this before. And I just didn't know really how to handle it. I was really nervous. I didn't know how slow I should take the pace because I kind of wanted it to be dramatic or suspenseful. And I didn't know how fast to take the pace so that other people weren't bored at the same time.
And that's the biggest part of what I wanted to talk about today was that specific issue. I don't know that there's a good answer. You know, again, this is just my advice and my opinion that for me as a player, I had a lot of fun that whole last hour and a half because it was pretty much the Michael show the last hour and a half. I pretty much did everything. The other two characters, or excuse me, the other two players were just kind of watching. And they were interested and they were having
fun.
Well,
the prison break, actual, the sneaking and the prison break probably only lasted 20 to 30 minutes. But for another 20 or 30 minutes, you guys were just in the town, in a house. You had gotten to the town, you got all the information, and then you just didn't know what to do and you were discussing it. So there was an hour where they didn't do anything with their characters, but at least for like 20 or 30 minutes of it, they were talking.
We were discussing options and that kind of
stuff like that. And I still think they had fun watching you because you were going to get Dolph's dad and Rob was sitting there like, is this going to work or not?
Right.
And I think Jared was into it in a different way because he was probably thinking like, I hope he gets caught.
Yes, he was.
And he was sitting there thinking like, oh, yes, he is going to get caught. This is
because Jared, Nico's character, thought I was stupid for doing this. So I think I agree. In character, he actually probably hoped that I would fail.
I didn't necessarily think it was that bad because through the whole time, I didn't see Rob or Nico just check out of the game.
In that case, it did go well. And my fear isn't that, not that it did go poorly that time, but there's that potential for it. Because I have seen other games and other situations where one player will monopolize a lot of the time at the game and the other characters, other players do get checked out. They start looking at their phones, reading through books. They do other things and they completely lose interest.
Could you suggest anything? Let's say you were DMing that position, that situation. And let's say just you and me were switched. Could you suggest anything where I've been dealing solely with you for the past 20 minutes, or you've been dealing with me? Could you think of anything off the top of your head real quick to turn to Rob and Nico and try to come up with something that they could be doing in Faulkmore's house or do some role-playing with them just to get them involved for 5 minutes?
I would try to find a way to do that. And again, I don't know that there's an easy answer, but probably we could have come up with something where they were more involved, either in the planning phase. You know, like we actually had the map of the town. Maybe we could have, in the group, said, okay, what's my best route? And have Jared, you know, he's the smart one. Let's watch the guards through the windows
but
for
Jared,
half an hour.
Or I should say Jared's character.
Nico's character, Jared.
Okay, yeah, Jared as the PC, he really wouldn't do that. He would just do what he was doing, which was sitting back and say, this is stupid, you're going to get caught.
But again, maybe as a role player, I could say, okay, well, we're going to try it. If it succeeds, it's easier, so why don't you help me? And it may not have worked, but try to get them involved in at least the planning phase So that way, when I'm executing it, then they have more of a buy and investment, especially if I improvise and I go off. They're going to be like, that's not what I told him to do. You know, like, why did he do that? That could have helped. The other thing is there were a couple moments where it really was iffy. And again, I don't know if you were cheating for me or against me, but there was a couple times where my roles for Hyde weren't that great, but I didn't get seen on the way there. I don't know if you just rolled poorly or if my bonuses were high enough, but it would have been very easy for you to say, okay, roll your Hyde. And there's that one time I think I rolled like a total of 12, which is really low for my Hyde score. And you could have been like, okay, you're hidden. The guard's approaching you and you're not sure if he sees you. All right, there's a knock on Falkenmore's house. And just right, almost like a cliffhanger, like, oh, am I going to get seen? And then you cut over. And even if it's just for 5 minutes, you know, a guard knocked on the door, like, hey, I noticed the lights on. What's going on? And, you know, Falkenmore's there with Chrislyn and the two NPCs. They have to hide under the bed. Make it to be a total Diary of Anne Frank moment. And the whole time that's going on, I'm like, well, what's going on with me?
That scenario sounds great in game. But I think I don't think I would have been able to do that dealing with multiple PCs in different situations and keep everything moving. Like, I wish I could do that, but that sounds like something that you could do in one of your games or for a more experienced DM. But just thinking about nothing like that ever even came into my head. I was tunnel visioned as a DM. I was tunnel visioned on what you were doing. And I was so worried about how that was going to play out. And I was so worried about whether or not I was doing it right. What you guys were thinking. Did you think I was cheating you? Did you think that I was unfair in any kind of way? I was so worried about that I was tunnel visioned on that. And so I never even thought about Rob and Nico. So yeah, a more experienced DM, I think, could do that, and it would be really good.
Well, and one of the things that I think helps us there, and again, you're doing, it was fun. Don't ever take away from that. Nico said it best, like in a lot of the other games I've been in where one character is monopolizing the time, it almost always seems like they're monopolizing it on irrelevant stuff. It might be important to their character. You know, for example, there's an herbalist. One of the guys is an herbalist in a game. This is just, you know, made up example. And he wants to go into the woods and find all these herbs to make pulses and poisons and herbs and all kinds of cool stuff. But it takes like half an hour of game time for him to do that. Everyone else is just sitting there. And while, yes, it's important to his character, but do we really need to role play that out and have, okay, roll a d20. Okay, you can find this herb, but not this herb. All right, so are you going to look underneath the tree or under the rock? I mean, for me as a player and as a DM, I don't have any interest in that at all. For me, that's all you roll d20, you get a high roll. Okay, you spend 2 days in the woods, you find XXY. 2 minutes, and now I'm back onto something else. I just don't want to get caught up where we're spending a lot of time on. I mean, it's good for the character, and as a player, I want my character to have that background, but I don't want to take away from other people. That's another good thing with email. You know, especially if you're in a game where it happens a lot when you're playing higher level adventures, where you may have an adventure, you do this, you do X, you do Y, you come back into the town, the next adventure may not start for 3 weeks of game time. Mm-hmm. You know, that gives time for everybody to heal up and buy new armor and buy new magic weapons, depending on the game you're in. That's when all that should happen, in my mind, is, okay, over the last 3 weeks, send an email. What is your character doing? What are they buying? And I don't think any at-the-table time should be taken up with that because it's so precious. You know, we have three to four hours at most now every 2 weeks. I don't want to spend half an hour of it doing silly stuff, in my mind, which is why I still felt bad. Even though I thought it went well, I don't think anybody was upset. I don't want to do that again because I'm afraid next time it will bother somebody and it will cause them to check out. So what I probably would have done is just make it quicker. I think Nico kind of even talked about that as well. Like, you would just decide in your head, okay, it's going to take 4 rolls to get there, 4 rolls back and a bluff check. Okay, roll four rolls. I roll my 4 rolls and just like kind of narrate it really quickly. All right, you get all the way there without any trouble. It wouldn't have been as exciting, but it would have been a lot quicker and it could have got back into the game faster. So again, I don't know that there is a right answer, but that's what I would have done to be fairer to the other players.
It would have been harder for me to keep track of all that just in my head without having the map of the town, because we just had a sheet of poster board that I had drawn out your town that you live in. And we didn't do like grids or anything, and we didn't keep track of you can move this many squares and stuff like that.
Right.
But we just used that town map as a reference for, and you put a piece on there and say, I'm going to go to this corner of this building. Now I'm going to go to this corner of this building. It was easier for me to do it on the map because I think I'm just a visual person and I could see, okay, by the time you get to here, because there was four guards total there was one in the center and there was always three roaming around the outside of the town. So seeing the map in front of me, I could picture in my head where the guards were, as opposed to doing all of it in my head, it would have been more difficult to keep. So that was it was a little bit easier for me, but yeah, for the sake of speeding things along, it would be better to probably just do it in my head. And if you're a really good DM, you can, you know, really get descriptive and describe it well enough so that it doesn't feel like you got rushed through it.
Right. So, again, I thought it worked out well. And I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about that as well in the D&D Next stuff, which we've done two play tests and probably on a separate podcast, we need to just do a D&D Next podcast and cover all of our opinions and stuff on that. But we did a couple combats Monday without the grid, mostly because it was just me and one other person, and usually I snuck up on them. But how did you think that went, not using the grid at all for those combats? Were you happy with it? Were you okay? Do you wish we'd used the grid?
It was cool because when it was over, I had a really, really good kind of movie film of all the combat in my head. Like, it was as if I was standing in my character's boots. And it was because I didn't have any references of a tabletop or like visions of a tabletop or the grid or anything like that. So when I look back and think about the combat, the only thing that comes into my head are the imaginative scenes that I was creating at the time. I don't have any pictures of a tabletop that come into my head for the combat. So it was really cool thinking back about it. But
in your game specifically Monday, because we had like just two or three little fights, one-on-one, me sneaking up on a guard when they weren't looking and trying to knock them out. We didn't use any grids for those.
I didn't even realize that. I mean, thinking back, like now I'm like, yeah, you're right. We did combat and we didn't use any grids.
Yeah,
there were
four combats. I won three of them. And then the fourth one I got hosed on. So a couple bad dice roll on my part. But yeah, there was no grid. We just did it all freeform.
I thought it went well.
I did too. Again, one-on-one, it's easy. If we had all, you know, I think that was the big difference. And you had brought that up before, after we did our first D&D Next playtest, you wanted to try a combat without the grid. And what I told you is do the one-on-one combat or just the one bad guy. If you've got six and six people, probably not the right time. So I think just going forward, you should always just kind of do that. You know, do I really need the grid here? And if you don't, just go with it. And if it gets too complicated.
What were the other situations where there was combat without the tabletop?
It was just me. It was me and four guards. I knocked out the prison
guard. The
first
guard, right.
Then I knocked out two of the roaming guards, and then the third roaming guard caught me, and then the other guards came.
So how do you, when you think back on that, how do you picture it?
I thought it was great, again, because of how it happened. Now, if I was trying to use my bow and shoot them from cover, then I probably would have preferred a grid. But the fact that I was just trying to sneak up behind them and basically knock them unconscious, because they're all like zero level farmers, and at this point I'm a third level rogue. My sneak attack damage,
you successfully just like one punch knocked out
two or three people in one punch. They didn't get it. You know, it's like James Bond, you know, Jason Bourne, walk up behind them, knock them unconscious type thing. And in my head, that's what I saw me doing, was grabbing their mouth and like elbow them in the back of the head, humanely as possible, knocking them out because these are my friends. But I just don't want.
I'm gonna
to
gently knock this guy out.
To gently elbow him in the skull.
I can't picture.
Well,
that.
The other option was stab him in the throat, which I didn't do because that definitely would have killed them. So I thought that was a great time not to use the grid. There was no reason to use it. I don't think it would have helped. It just would have slowed things down. We would have had to draw the town back. So I just think it was a perfect example. But I don't want to necessarily go away from the grid every time either.
Yeah, true. And thinking about it, like, it would have. Do you think that you had a really good? Do you think you had a good scene in your head of what you were doing and the sneaking and things like that. I'm just thinking about it, and I think if I was you, it would have interrupted the movie of what was going on in my head. It would have interrupted that if I would have said, okay, since you're going to try and knock this guy out, we need to go to the grid and do this on...
Yeah, it would have been disruptive. Like you said, it was a dark night. I wear dark clothing. I'm really good at hiding and sneaking. That's what my character does. So in my head, yes, I saw myself darting from corner to corner. I had like a hood on, you know, blending into the shadows and sneaking up and, you know, punching the people in the back of the head. Like, I can see my character doing all of that rather than seeing my token going six squares and then attacking with flanking.
Yeah.
So in that case, absolutely, I do think that was the right choice. I just, like I said, I don't think that's the right choice every time.
But like I said, I didn't even make a conscious decision to do that. I just never thought about it.
Oh. Then you made a great unconscious decision. Congratulations.
Yeah, it worked well.
All right. So what else do we want to talk about?
We don't have anything else to cover on the topics. So okay. Do you want to just talk about monkeys for a while?
We could. Or we could go ahead and do some website stuff and cut this down and get it posted up today.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty good for today. So what else do you want to talk about real quick about the website before we leave?
You can just go to it, visit it. We've linked to some other websites like the feartheboot.com, the Tome Show, some of the other podcasts. I've linked to two of the ones that I read regularly, which is Sly Flourish and the Idiom. And also Order of the Stick, which is hilarious. So hopefully show some love to those guys that they've kind of encouraged and got us wanting to do this by listening to them and seeing their success. And leave some comments and let us know what you think so that maybe we can get better at it.
All right. From my basement, that's all for this show. And we'll see you next time.
All right. See you guys.